This is PT Talker, presented by Advantage Medical. The aim of this podcast is to expose physical therapists to unique and innovative ideas to help grow their business. Each broadcast will introduce you to new concepts that will save you time, provide a better patient outcome, or lower your cost. And now, the host of PT Talker, Jeff Worrell.
I'm Jeff Worrell, and I'll be your host today as we bring to you another expert from the world of physical therapy, as we like to do each and every week right here on PT Talker. Joining me today is Mr. Alan Besselink. He's a physical therapist practicing in his own practice called Smart Sport in Austin, Texas. Alan, it sounds like you've been doing that now for about 8 years. Welcome to PT Talker.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here today.
Well, I'm glad you decided to join us, and let me just give our listeners a little bit of background on you. We found you because you are a very active blogger at alanbesselink.com. That's A-L-L-A-N-B-E-S-S-E-L-I-N-K. Is that right, .com?
That is correct.
Okay. And you've got a lot of things going on. You've written a book. But I was intrigued by your Smart Life project that you've got up there, where you're talking about how healthcare needs to change and how physical therapists need to change. Give us just an overview about Smart Life project and how our listeners might find that information useful today.
I think that we're at a really interesting point in the history of healthcare right now, and certainly in the history of well care or fitness. We've kind of had this approach as PTs that we're fixers and gurus, and we know the field that we know. But what I found over my training through the McKinsey Institute, and certainly in dealing with athletes, is that I think that we're missing the focus that where we can really expand our capacities in the health and healthcare market. And that is really to look at ourselves in terms of health mentors, where we're focusing on what I call competent self-care strategies. And the Smart Life Project is really geared towards trying to make cultural change to get physical therapists and coaches and trainers and the average Joe on the street to really understand that health can be about self-care, as opposed to, you know, having to fix a problem. We can actively prevent it and provide people with strategies to do so.
So how do you, how practical do you think this is in our world today where, healthcare is exploding and people are running to the doctor for, you know, every malady known to man? How practical is it, or how well is your message being received? Because it sounds to me like you want to really change things or go the other direction.
It is definitely a process, without a doubt. If you look at the average patient or the average person on the street, they have a very hard time getting past the concept of insurance and going to a doctor when they're sick and things like that. It's very hard to make that perceptual change with people. But I think that when it comes down to things like cost, eventually, we have to have a change in the system, and somewhere along the line, there will have to be a breakpoint where we simply have to do things differently. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to support what we have. The interesting thing is that when you look at self-care strategies, many of those things are obviously very cost-effective. Many of the conditions that we see as physical therapists are responsive to those things. We don't have to see a patient 3 times a week for 4 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever to watch somebody do their exercises. They can be, we can serve as a role of guide and mentor to get people to look at these things a different way.
So now, is that how you are running your practice currently?
My practice is very much along those lines. The patient comes in for an initial assessment. We go over all the things in their initial assessment, and they're leaving with essentially a game plan, if you will, in terms of the things they need to do, the things they need to look for, the benchmarks that they're trying to attain. And then I serve as a as a mentor in that process, and the follow-ups with them are certainly not as frequent as perhaps a more traditional approach.
So you're not seeing the patient Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
That is definitely not the case, unless necessary, of course.
Sure, sure.
There are certain cases where that may be necessary.
And are you accepting insurance?
I have done everything on a fee-for-service basis for the last 8 years, which provides its own set of challenges.
Sure.
Again, perceptual. When you actually provide the patient with information in terms of what insurance is about, how it works, how a fee-for-service basis with fewer visits overall actually saves them money, it takes a lot of educating on my part. Really to get people to understand that they may actually save money.
Yeah, I was just wondering if that's where you were going. Do you feel like you've got a good story to tell there that patients might save money? And I'm assuming you're looking at copays, which are creeping up into that $40 range now, it seems like. The 80-20 and out-of-network and all that business?
Fortunately, many people now are coming into the office with health savings accounts, which certainly makes a big difference.
Okay.
The thing that I have always had to come back to is, number one, that I do approach the problem differently. It is going to be very exercise and education-oriented. But the selling point for me, the only way that I can compete, essentially, is to say, I've got a better way, and we can do this in fewer visits.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when you market it in those terms, then it's a case of, when you do the math, this is actually going to save you money.
Yeah. So let's go back to Smart Life. SMART is an acronym that you've created. What does that stand for?
SMART was originally intended to mean scientific mechanisms applied to rehabilitation and training, because my interests were from the rehabilitation end, but also to the coaching end as well.
Yeah, and you're fairly critical in your blog about techniques or treatments that are not evidence-based. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think I always come back to the fact that we have 50 years of cellular physiology research that we have kind of left to the side for many hypothetical treatments that certainly have questionable physiological basis, let alone realistic treatment outcomes.
Like, can you give me an example of one you're thinking of right now that would be common in PT?
I think that a large number of the techniques that are applied in a clinical setting, I think that many of them have very limited research to support them.
Okay.
That being the case, I don't mean to avoid the question, but I think that there are quite a few of them.
Let's pick one. Are you speaking, because I'm trying to follow you here, so are you talking about like modalities or specific exercises or?
Well, that's good. Now that you've said that, Jeff, let's go there. The modality side of things. Certainly, is there some physiological basis? Yes. Is the literature very skewed on it? Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Then the question, probably the overriding question is there something that a patient can do under their own forces? So, for example, can they use an exercise to foster the response that they are claimed to be getting by way of the modality?
Yeah. Okay.
And if that's the case, then why are we doing it?
Okay.
If we can use good exercise concepts, good patient self-care concepts, where does that offer any value-added benefit to the patient? I mean, it certainly offers value-added benefit to the bill.
Yeah.
But does it really make a difference?
Right. Okay. And I'm with you. So, and we all want to be there. So let's just, if I were to walk into a typical physical therapy practice today, I'll bet someone is receiving a muscle stim treatment for pain control or maybe edema reduction. But let's just go with pain control. What can I do instead of that quad polar interferential, let's just say, that they're doing, that the patient gets Monday, Wednesday, Friday? What can I do instead that the patient can do themselves to deal with their pain?
I think that we can be looking at what's bringing the symptoms on in the first place. Maybe mm-hmm. the understanding of the production of the symptoms isn't there by the clinician. Mm-hmm. Then the patient needs to understand what that is, which then involves probably activity modification. If you go to the population I deal with, which is primarily runners, cyclists, active people, they need to understand the relationship between their activity and their symptoms. So if you use that and things like general activity, gentle movement to mid-range, to end-range, to whatever is appropriate, oftentimes they can be doing things that will foster the same response. My debate is, does it, given the fact that it has limited science behind it or questionable, then is it worth going there for the patient when the result is debatable?
Okay. All right.
So I mean, maybe it's better than just simply modifying activity, being educated in terms of the production of your symptoms and that sort of thing. I mean, are we really offering them anything more?
Right, right. So, and I'm just trying to think like, okay, so let's say there's a study which iontophoresis is one. We've had guests on here on PT Talker about iontophoresis. I know that there are some positive studies that look at, you know, I think I'm just thumbing back through here through PT Talker quick. It looks like there's one from Nerschel looking at medial epicondylitis or lateral epicondylitis. How do you respond to that kind of science? Is that not good or not good enough?
I think that we then have to look at what the effect is that we're trying to elicit mm-hmm. at the cellular level, whatever that is.
Okay.
Chances are there is some kind of loading strategy that can be applied to the tissues to get it to do what it is that we're trying to accomplish with something else.
Okay, all right.
If it's an inflammatory response, then they probably need to be modifying activity. If it's a case of trying to stimulate the repair and remodeling process, then it needs to be activity-driven.
Yeah, so you're really kind of going more towards a prevention, even trying to just modify the behavior instead of trying to change it with a technique or something.
Yeah, I think that it really requires an understanding on the patient's side of things, and they need to be able to mediate the mechanical stresses,
mm-hmm.
and they can. Certainly in the population I see, it's a case of modifying their training, as an example, and that's why I've ended up coaching people and why I ended up writing the book that I did, just purely because I'm seeing these things all the time. These 90% of running injuries are training program related.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the case, then we've missed the boat.
Right.
We're looking at malalignments and muscle imbalances and all these things that have never, ever been proven to have any relationship with the cause of a running injury. That literature is very sound, but what are we continuing to do? We're micromanaging problems when nobody's talking about, well, what is it about your training program that failed you?
Yeah.
So and why were you unable to recover from your training program?
Right. So if I come to you with shin splints as a runner, are you successful in getting rid of those shin splints by modifying my training program?
That's going to be the majority of let me rephrase that. Your training program is certainly going to be related to the onset of your symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are, I mean, certainly there is a history involved there. In order for us to have successful resolution, we have to look at your training program, and we have to look at why your body was unable to recover from the demands imposed.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know the body will.
Okay.
It will adapt to whatever the imposed demands are. If you're injured, you have been unable to adapt, which usually means that you've been unable to recover from the stresses imposed. So we need to understand, one, the training plan and why these demands are what they are, and two, why are you not recovering? Why are you not adapting?
Yeah.
Perhaps it's just the strength of tissues. Perhaps it's the fact that you're a new runner and the process of adaptation is slower. It could be a number of things, but if you're not looking at the training program, I think you're missing the biggest part of the problem.
Okay. All right. Now, real quick, before we run out of time, tell us a little bit about your book and how folks could get a hold of it.
Run Smart is a comprehensive approach to injury-free running. It looks at certainly some of the things that we've just talked about as far as an approach to running injuries. It discusses running mechanics, the literature behind that. It looks at an approach to run training and the principles behind how to build a training program. And it also starts to go into the issue of being an injured runner. What does that involve? Kind of giving the layperson a basis for what are we really looking at in terms of a clinician to go see? Who's going to be able to guide you out of this problem? It's available by way of Amazon.com and through Lulu.com, the publisher.
Okay.
And
it's called Run Smart by Besselink, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Alan. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today on PT Talker.
Thanks very much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
As happens to me every week, we are sadly out of time, and the topic was so interesting. You've been listening to Alan Besselink, who is a physical therapist. He is the owner of Smart Sport, which is his own physical therapy practice down in Austin, Texas. Been doing that for 8 years, and we learned today on the podcast that he is not accepting insurance, that it is fee for service. So after 8 years of doing that, you must be successful, and you found the secret, Alan. So we wish you the best of luck in your in future endeavors, and keep us up to speed on what you're doing at PT Talker, if you would.
Will do. Thanks.
Okay, and if you want to find out more about Alan Besselink, go to his site, his blog, and we'll put that in the blog when we put this up. And I want to thank everyone for listening to today's podcast, where we have brought you hopefully and some expertise that will help you to help someone get well today. And as I do each and every week, we will be back next week, but we want to wish you all the best this week and tell you thanks for listening.
PT Talker is a presentation of Advantage Medical, bringing you business news and ideas for therapists. Join us each week for new concepts to help you grow your rehabilitation business. To listen to previous episodes, visit us on the web at pttalker.com or on iTunes.